There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Final Word Show. Liverpool beat West Ham by 3-2 and it was genuinely glorious. This show is brought to you in association with the Football Index, where you can trade on your football knowledge. Get involved, pick up players, build a portfolio, and if those players perform, then you get dividends off the back of it. They've set me a challenge, they've given me £1,000. The proceeds from that are going to go to a charity of our choice. You can keep up to date with that on the build-up show. But yeah, make sure you get involved with the Football Index. Please gamble responsibly, and remember that you've got to be 18 plus to get involved with Football Index. There we go. Gents. Oh.
Oh. Glorious.
Chris, it's
marvellous.
It's living. There was a point which, I don't know, Anfield was a very, very subdued arena for the first, probably the first half of the football match, to be honest. But actually, probably until it went to 2-1. Yeah. We'll come to that, you know, the incident of the game. But ultimately, that game, everyone walked out of Anfield with a spring in their step.
And that's what happens, isn't it? You know, I mean, we've got to find our excitement somewhere. And I say we, I mean the Liverpool side. because we're steamrolling this league right now. And we have done since the start of the season. And we've had tough times and tough moments during games, but it hasn't felt like we've really had any for a while. So I don't know. I mean, like, it's the things that you can't doubt about this side are the reason that they're so good.
Yeah.
It's that never say die attitude. It's that they just will not give up in any way, shape or form. And they've got an unerring belief in themselves and their tactics. And that's the reason we're a great side.
Yeah, there was... It's funny because I put out, I said it on a couple of post-match shows, Tom, and I put it out on Twitter about how that was very much the result that we all needed. And I had people in the flesh and people on Twitter saying, no, I wanted a 4-0 win. I'm like, yeah, and no, we all want 5-0 wins every week. But in terms of what we needed, particularly coupled with the Atletico result,
yeah,
where we were disappointed, Liverpool weren't at the best, and you think, well, we've got to G ourselves up, and then you go up against West Ham, and it's Moyes, who never wins at Anfield, ever, and you're behind. We actually, in terms of just galvanising the whole process, that's why I love that so much. That was what I mean by it. That's exactly what we needed.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a few of these results this season where we've just battled, like, just gone at a team. I've never seen us actually just keep turning over the team, just keeping that consistency going over and over and over over a period of a long stretch of time. And it was just nice to see. Obviously, we had the Villa one away, Wolves away. We had Arsenal in the Cup at home, and we had Sheffield away as well. They were the ones I was trying to think of. What were the games that were exactly like that, where you've just got to, you're under the cosh, and you've got to go and get out there? And the weird thing for me, Paul, is I was not worried. And it might have been different in the ground because of the way it was and what have you. But I was sat there and I think I put a tweet out. We were 2-1 down. I literally just went, it's fine. I genuinely believe in this team because I've been at these games. I was at Villa and I was at Wolves.
Yeah.
And I've believed and I've G'd up the team. I've done my best to G up this team. That's exactly what Anfield did towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
And it paid off massively because that's what this team does.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, I went in at half-time, Ross, thinking, okay, well, we're always better than second half, so this will be fine. When it went to 2-1, I was a bit like, huh, okay. But I agree with Tom. Look, it's not that I didn't consider that we could, you know, we could lose or we could drop points or whatever, but I also wasn't nervous about it because there's just a great assuredness about the way this team plays. It never rushes. You've not got lads legging it all over the place. It's bizarre because like we time waste when we're drawing and losing games. You know what I mean? Like we don't leg it. We take our time over throw-ins. We'll make sure the right person to take the throw-in takes the throw-in. Everyone's where they need to be, and they just press on and do what they do.
Yeah, I think it's just a bizarre feeling to A, concede two goals at Anfield for the first time, probably Everton, I think, and then to be behind in the second half. So, like, you're not sure how to react. But I was the same as Thomas going, this will be sound. I think they got the confidence in themselves to pull a result out of the bag, but the patience as well. Like, you know, I think that's where the confusion comes in. When people say, oh, I want a 4-0 win. Like, you can't have that every week. West Ham causes problems, and they're going to. But I think, you know, the half-time thing, I thought that as well, thinking, well, we'll get him at half time. It'll bollock him as well as the tactical changes with the, you know, the analysis that they do. But sometimes you just need to kick up the arse from Klopp. It might be as simple as that. And it didn't work until we went 2-1 down.
Yeah. The kick up the arse from Klopp came with the Ox substitution.
Yeah.
That's when it all happened. That's when it all changed. And there was an assertiveness about that substitution. And it was like Klopp just going, no way, no chance, no how. I am making this change now. It was 53 minutes. We just conceded. And he wasn't wasting time. He was pulling them back as the goal was going in. And did you see what happened before that with Naby Keita, anybody? He's flipping about Naby Keita, and he does it like three times about his positioning, not about what he's doing with the ball and stuff. He's telling Keita to go forwards, and he's telling him again, and he's telling him again, and we can see then he just hooks him.
Wow.
And he's like, wow, right, this is a big fucking change. This is what's going to happen. And you saw the space that opened up for Ox. Like, it's horses for courses sometimes with footballers. I'm not saying Keita's a bad player because I don't think he had a great game. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Ox is a better player than Keita. But in that game, at that moment, Ox is exactly what we need. Klopp recognised that. Didn't dilly-dally. Put him in there and we go on and win because of that.
It was an odd performance from Naby Keita, wasn't it? It was fine at times. We come out talking about it on the instant match. I didn't think he had a very good game, but you said I thought he was all right, you know. But I think I'm expecting so much from him. And we normally when he plays, he's just dead good. You know, he's either assisting or he's scoring. He was a bit kind of flitting in and out. I saw him do a lot of the box to box stuff. But you're right. I think we needed him. We didn't need him to be box to box. We needed him to be putting the pressure on. We needed him further up the pitch. And in the second half, and he didn't get long in the second half, but he was actually sweeping up a bit, almost too much. And you're right, when Ox comes on, it changes the thing.
Just on Keita, just a little bit, and maybe you want to talk about him a little bit later and stuff.
No, I
come out the game, right, and I was like, he did some really good stuff and he did some really shit stuff. So I looked at the stats this morning. I've not had time to watch the full game back yet, and I will do. And he lost the ball three times. That was it. Mm. And I said to you this morning, we were sat around the table having a cuppa and that, and I was like, I must remember every one of those times. Yeah. And that's why I've come out the game being a little bit probably more down on Naby than he deserves. Like, his passing was on point. I think he could complete a 37 of 39. In comparison, Trent loses the ball 22 times. Yeah. Keita loses it 3. You know, and when you put it like that, and Robbo's over, I think Robbo's about 22, and Firmino's up there with about 14 or something like that. And then you're like, I must literally just remember all three of the times, but he tries these hard passes. He doesn't try the easy ball. And sometimes you might look at, like, I'll use Jordan Henderson as an example, where he gets the ball on the edge area, and instead of trying to play a ball into striker's feet, he'll play the ball right. And in my head, I recognise that's good, we're keeping the ball. But Naby wants something more quickly. That's the type of, like, aggressive footballer that he is.
That first half, Tom, because I thought we were poor, by and large, in the first half, but it was like an impressionist painting of what you're meant to do, as opposed to being like a photo or, you know, photorealistic. It was like the general shape of how you're meant to play, but everything was just blurred. It was like, you know, the passing was all half a foot off, or the touches were just slightly off, or whatever. The overall system and how we were doing it was generally okay, but Naby Keita was probably a decent example of that. He just didn't. It wasn't laser focused. It wasn't tangibly brilliant. He was just.
The main thing for me was the amount of space that we let them have in the midfield. Usually teams don't get that, and they were able to pick through us quite a bit. And I thought that was really strange. And like, you don't get that in a Jordan Henderson midfield, because he's everywhere, and you notice it. You notice the high press right there. Jordan Henderson's injured. Naby Keita's got to come in and try and replicate that. He was involved in the first goal. He starts jinking through. Great, and one, that's what he's fantastic at, and that's where he's different to Ox. And I think, look, Ox comes on and you know for a fact he's going to pick the ball up and have a shot. That's the first thing he wanted to do. He had to test it, and then everyone's like, oh, so people are backing off or going to him and it's open up space and blah, blah, blah. Because Naby Keita loves that little incisive stuff, doesn't he, where he's playing little one-twos and he's fantastic at it. But I just think they just crowded everywhere and it just wasn't the right thing. And it was a great substitution, the perfect man to bring on, because then people just started taking shots. You saw Trent taking shots, you saw Robbo taking shots. You're thinking, okay, this is better. Whereas I don't think Naby Keita having a shot from distance is not that. Look, I'm sure he can do it, but it's not as dangerous. And yeah, you're right. In the horses for courses thing, it's just nice though that we have these different options. Because one game, Ox might play, and everyone's like, they've got the situational awareness to kind of block that. You go, all right, play through the middle with Naby Keita. They're giving off the space.
Well, I was talking to my brother-in-law Ross, and he said this thing about Liverpool don't really have there like a target man or someone to change the game or whatever. And I used the old analogy of you don't need a plan B, you just need to make your plan A better. And what we've got, and that's what Tom's saying there is spot on, is that the horses for courses approach is that we're still playing largely the same system, but you drop guys in, it's just got different attributes. And it does it. It completely changes how you play the game by the personnel that you're dropping into the system, and that's the difference. Ox is just so much more direct. He just runs. He runs in straight lines and looks to pick. You know, looks to play
he'll
wide with his or looks to have
touch,
a shot,
and he'll get his body across you.
Yeah,
and that's not what Naby. Naby will slow it down and jink around you. You know, they're just two different approaches.
I think Naby prefers having people close to him so he can do a couple of step overs and glide past them. When he just got caught out yesterday, I think you're totally right in the midfield congestion. Was just like, he just wasn't working for him. I think sometimes you think make plan A better. Sometimes he might need to make his plan A better. Yeah. If it's not working, then just maybe try something slightly different.
Yeah. I enjoyed, Ross, I enjoyed Gary Neville putting the video out saying that Liverpool were bottling it.
He's never learned, will he?
He's just a divvy.
It's a fair play to him, though. He kept it up, didn't he? Yeah. And then just seconds later, when Liverpool scored, Gary retweeted it, and I've used it last night and this morning, so fair play. Yeah. But like, he's quite good. They did loads of pieces on Liverpool beforehand and afterwards as well, actually. You know, he's really complimentary about Liverpool, so like, I hated him as a player. I quite like him as a pundit.
It's funny thinking how many people will have been celebrating that. Like, just like, oh, it's 2-1. West Ham, I get to give Liverpool shit again, and we've just gone through.
How many times last season we turned City games on because it wasn't quite going their way, only to watch City win and be...
Give you a wait till the end.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so, yeah, I like that. I mean, look, again...
I mean, I've seen tweets going like, West Ham are going to beat beat Liverpool today by Manx, and then the second tweet is, yeah, classic fucking thing for getting new followers or engagements, and you're like, nah, lads, you fucked up, you were wrong, you shouted your mouth off, now everyone's retweeting you and laughing at you because you're the tit.
I tweeted David Moyes as a football genius when we went 4-2 up because, like, oh, this is safe. And it was like, oh, shit, it's been ruled offside.
That offside one's really interesting because it harks back to what Tom was saying before, doesn't it? Ox comes on, takes that shot from distance. That, you know, a few minutes later, whatever, 20 minutes later or something, two people are closing him down and it frees up the space for Trent. Yeah. And that's what that sighter does. And it's not always about what you're doing in the moment, but you can quite often set things up for later on in the game.
Can we talk about the football genius of David Moyes? As much as we can praise Klopp's speed of thought and aggression in making the substitution, David Moyes completely handed us that football game by basically letting Trent Alexander-Arnold have the rest of the game off by taking Felipe Anderson off. Like, I watched, it was like three times in the space of about 5 minutes where Trent was pushing up high up the pitch and Anderson picked it up just in the left wing back slot and just dropped the shoulder and walked past Trent. And then all of a sudden he took him off. We scored 3 minutes after he makes the substitution. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. What the fuck is he doing there? I mean, I'd be fascinated to see.
People I know sit behind the dugouts over there still, and they said they could smell burnt toast, and it must have been what Moyes was doing.
He must have had
a fucking soak or something. He's not come up with a fucking good thing there.
He's had a senior moment, hasn't he? Because I'd be interested to know what like the average positions were in terms of where West Ham obviously were, because they move. They bring Haller on centre forward, which I get because he's the big money centre forward sign. He's the guy who's most likely to get them a goal. And I understand they've had to jig things around because of injuries and all that kind of stuff. Like, but all of their joy and all the problems they caused us our fullbacks had a torrid time in that first half. Andy Robertson had a really tough
Snodgrass
time.
Snodgrass was giving him...
Snodgrass and Antonio were giving him all kinds, like, just stretching and making him come back. It was lots of... Like, how many corners they won? Just by us having to put a block tackle in right at the dead,
and
at the
dead ball. It wasn't like a lump ball over the top. That's the thing. They built through the middle. Yeah. They built through the midfield. And it was like, I was watching, I was like, these are playing really well. I was surprised because me and Ross went down to their ground. And they were dire. Yeah. Like, they gave us a few problems, but nothing really, really massive. And you're just thinking, oh, what's going on here? So to then try and, like, they're not trying to play through the middle using Anderson and what have you, it was just so strange.
When
to
you
see
just
it.
Put, you took, like, cause as much as Hal is probably a good footballer or whatever, he might be a decent Premier League centre forward, you're putting him into Virgil van Dijk's fucking zone. And even Joe Gomez, who both had brilliant games. Yeah. And again, we were struggling. You know, it took a lot of bravery for Trent and Robert to go, you know, to really commit. But they were causing both of those lads problems. And it was just like they gone. And once they switched it, it was like, and all of a sudden, Trent is just uncontested in the final 40 yards of the pitch. Time and time again. David Moyes is
at a time in the game where that's when you look to take advantage of us. You know, you're 2-1 up. You know we're going to be pushing our fullbacks even higher than we normally do. And I didn't get it. Normally I think Antonio plays really well against us and always, I seem to remember him always giving us trouble. But Joe Gomez physically had him off.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised about that. That was the one thing that I came off the game going, I've not seen, like, Antonio gives us problems, and he was never over near Van Dijk because he knows better than that, Antonio. But Gomez was pushing him off the ball, like, and he was falling over, and you're like, fucking hell, Joe's strong here, and he dealt with him. So, yeah, he moved him out to the left wing. He doesn't cause anywhere near as many problems as Felipe Anderson, but he does have that one amazing through ball. I think it was him.
To the young lad. Bowen,
yeah, that's a brilliant through ball, like. Yeah. Absolutely stupid. That was the only thing I seem to remember him doing there, like. But terrible substitutions, and thank you, David.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anderson was coming back from an injury, though, wasn't he? Maybe that's why he took him off.
Maybe.
But also, I said this after the game last night as well. If Liverpool are the fittest team in the league for me,
yeah.
So maybe they're just completely goose, and you think, well, we'll win in, get some fresh legs on. But it didn't work out for
him. But he took a wide man off and put a centre forward.
The forwards aren't going to be that tired. Most of the centre forwards just stayed still. He wasn't even running. He was in fucking Gomez's pocket, getting carried around after fucking game.
The best.
Not even
one.
Used his legs.
The best one for me is Gomez is like just backtracking, stand tackle, and just takes the ball away. And I was like, Joe, oh my god! But he did it over and over again. There was one where he brought the ball down and then just turned his man and walked away with it. And I was like, this is like you see Joe Matip come on at the end, and look, Joe Matip's great. But he just fouls him on the edge of the box.
You're like,
Joel, what are you doing,
that
mate?
That was one of the most insane substitute appearances I've seen since that game where James Milner came on and gave the ball away, like, you know, like about 3 times. It was mad. It was like he was a competition winner. It was like he'd never played football before.
It was like me joining that Legends game. That's what it was like.
It was Joel Matip turned into what we all kind of thought he was at his worst. Put bridges like that, waving arm, inflatable.
Just
looked
like
man.
A giraffe on the football field.
Just barmy.
It must be so hard. Imagine coming into that game and you're like, shut it up, lad. I haven't played for ages, boss. Like, what do you want me to do? I've got no rhythm.
We're
going to
put
all.
The centre half, who's brilliant, who's had one of my man in the match performances from Gomez. We're going to shift him to right back. Yeah. And we're going to put Trent in midfield. What's that about?
It worked.
It was crazy.
It worked.
It did work. But
it worked, just in a roundabout fashion. Right, let's go back to the actual elements of the game then. The first goal, wonderful, wonderful dugout across from Trent. Two assists on the night. That's 13 assists this season. 12 in the Prem, which is exactly the same as he got in the whole of last year. He's two behind, his total of 15.
His delivery was fucking sensational last night, wasn't it?
When will people learn? I said against when we played Madrid in a week, like they gave him loads of space on Robbo because I think they were fine. I think we said it's on the build-up, just cross it in, we'll deal with it. But there's a massive quality difference, which we also said between West Ham and Madrid. But you just can't give him that time. And he got interviewed afterwards, and he got asked, like, do you just put it in like a hit and hope, or do you pick a space? Do you pick out a man? He said a bit of both. So like he practices it on a daily basis, and. But yeah, the stats speak for himself. Why do you not look at that and go, we need to cut that out? And equally for Robert, I know it's hard because it's picky poison. You're giving time to cater and
you shouldn't be able to put that cross you shouldn't be able to score from that position. No. I think everyone kind of takes a bit of a breather because it is, it's not in a dangerous position of the field. Trent's basically running away from goal, you know, and the way he has to dig it out.
But he slows down as well. That was the thing that really caught my eye on watchback is he's 6 yards away and he's slowing his run down because he knows he's going to make it and he can't get there too quickly. It was like, if you watch it back, that for me was like, everything else is unbelievable, but slowing down, like there's a natural reaction
like
to get there as fast as possible because you think it's going out of play. Yeah. He knows it's not. He knows he can get
Mo
there.
Mo Salah did that down as well, didn't he?
He definitely slowed down.
I have never been more angry. This is the most angry I've been at a Liverpool player.
So when we were throwing?
The moment where the ball inexorably crawls at a player, Mo Salah gives it up, and then goes, and you realise he could have cut if he just walked, if he just carried on walking, he'd have, oh my God, I was like, because it was right in front of me.
It was indicative of his entire performance, really, wasn't it?
Stop, go. What is he doing?
That Trent cross is fantastic, but Declan Rice did it later on as well goal.
Yeah.
And it's basically one of them where you know you've got no time, because Trent knows he's got no time really either.
Yeah.
Put it into a proper dangerous area. Both of them were great goals. Like, Gini Wijnaldum's header is unbelievable, and obviously it should get saved. Fabianski had a terrible, terrible game, but like, to get that on target with enough power to beat Fabianski, fantastic.
I can understand switching off when it's Declan Rice in that position, but like, never switch off when Trent's got the ball on the wing anywhere at all. It's funny how things happen in footy, isn't it? How you're influenced by what you see around you. I don't know that Declan Rice tries that cross if Trent hasn't done it in the first half, because it's basically
I've probably seen them 3 or 4 times this season, and he does. I think he's their best player, to be honest.
Oh, he is the best player.
And I thought he was good again last night. I think he does try that. I think I've seen him do that a few times, but the delivery was unbelievable. That number 18 who came on at half time, he was one of the reasons that they gave us so many problems. Second half, he was just everywhere Fabinho wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't always receive the ball, but he was causing us massive headaches and moving Fabinho around. And I think he really struggled with him, whoever he was.
Four nails.
As
long as he was 18.
Four nails. Yeah.
That goal was really good, though, from Declan Rice, because he comes from deep, and I think he runs through the middle and runs out to the side, drags Gini Wijnaldum out the way, and then where that man then should have been managed, but there was a bit of miscommunication, opens up that space in the centre, and then Funals is just in there, and great finish. But I was watching it, I was like, that's great footballer, and it is lax defending from us, but Gini's just like, I've got to follow that man, that is my man, I've got to follow that space, Mane should be coming in, but Mane doesn't know, he can't see behind him. But that's what you've got to be to score against Liverpool. You've got to have them little flashes and that really good movement. And West Ham really gave it a good goal, to be fair.
I thought Alan Cresswell was brilliant as well. Again, first half is another one. He pinned Trent back. The amount of times he was one-on-one with him and he got past him. It's just interesting because he's a Scouser, isn't he? And I've always got one eye on the other Scousers floating around the Premier League, Conor Cody being the other one, the other obvious one.
Kev Nolan as well.
I had no idea Kev Nolan was on the coaching
staff. I only knew because Antonio kept Mark and Alisson on every corner. And we were like fucking fighting, and I was like, Kev Nolan's got to be on this fucking coaching staff.
It's just one trick.
What can you bring to the table? Well, David.
I remember Sam Allardyce making me do this one. And also, you can do like this as a celebration. Nailed it. What next, coach? Fancy coming for a bevy? Doug Creswell was brilliant. And I've just had an eye on him for a while. Look, we don't need him because of Andy Robertson, of course. That was a great audition, and it made me think that if you were ever going to... There's probably tons of people who'd be like, oh, because I got a similar response when I mentioned Conor Cody. We have a real elitism, as though everyone knew Andy Robertson was a player when we signed him. Something about a player like him, we could do far worse than having Aaron Creswell in the squad, because he was that good. Let's see, Mo Salah. No, let's see. Yeah, Mo Salah. Let's go with Mo Salah. Why not? He's been in weird form, but he's now got 6 goals in his last 8 Premier League games.
Great finish as well. Yeah. Right through his legs.
Fabianski. Honestly, I've been saying this for ages, and I like, he's garnered a load of like bizarre kudos. Fabianski's crap, and like, he's not, because he's a Premier League goalkeeper.
Is he really good?
He's not, though.
He's all right.
He's in that bracket of goal. He's Mignolet, and that's all. You know what I mean?
He's worse than Mignolet.
I don't think he is. I think he's better.
He's just Simon Mignolet. He's as good at He's got no distribution. He's a good shot stopper. He's fine. He's got that experience of him being being at Arsenal, so that he can say, "I was at Arsenal." And people go, "Ooh, Arsenal! Tell me some Arsenal stories. What's Arsene Wenger like?" And then they realise
all three goals are his fault.
There you go.
All three goals are his fault for me.
He's better. He's miles better than that. Like awful EastEnders bouncer that they had in goal for like 2 months. Yeah.
He was terrible. Roberto. I remember watching him.
I thought you were talking about Adrian for a bit there. I was like, what's a fucking sly lad?
No, Roberto is one of the. He's defo like blagged that he's a goalkeeper.
Yeah, he doesn't like using his hands.
No,
he actively jumps out the way of the ball. Yeah. It was a great game to watch.
Fabianski is a shit Hugo Lloris, is what he is. He's that type of goalkeeper. No, but like he's nothing. He made some really good saves in that game, but he's a goalkeeper. I keep saying this. He's a good shot stopper. You're a fucking goalkeeper. If you're not a good shot stopper, give it up.
Yeah.
Honestly, because what else are you bringing to the table? He tries to do the Gordon Banks palm up for Genie's header like an idiot.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
He then lets one through his legs.
And then he's got no pace to get there. I mean, there was one where Alisson's running towards and Van Dijk's like, it's yours. And the West Ham player gets a touch to it. And I was like, and then it's just like, no, Alisson's just got it. And there was another one where Gomez fucks up and Alisson's on his toes.
It's Antonio running through and Gomez slips. Yeah. And he runs through, and Alisson just comes and deals
with it. That's the absolute...
I don't know whether this is one of the ones that you're talking about. The ball first half was going into our box, and it's the one where Alisson just picks it up like that, but it's dead close. I don't know if that's one of the ones you're talking about.
He did one in both halves.
It was like Alisson was the only person in the ground who knew he could use his hands. Because the entire cop was thinking, like, fucking slide and just time. And everyone was like, and he just goes...
Right.
And everyone's like, oh shit, he's a goalkeeper. Yes,
of course. Yeah, duh. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I did dig out Fabianski before then, but to be fair to Salah, the movement to get into that space, and it's a great run from...
whoever it is that goes towards the back stick.
I can't remember, but it's fantastic. And Robbo to get down that wing, put that ball in, you'd expect Mo to just put it in the corner, but at least he gets on
it's
target.
It's mad because it comes from a moment. We had, like, 10 minutes of just ridiculous pressure. I was saying to you before, Tom, there was a spell of like a minute and a half where we had like three corners and the crowd were up. Yeah. Everyone was whistling and jeering and booing. It became a cauldron for like that for that 10 minutes. And they're the things that happen when you're on, you feel like you've got to be on your best, and you're very aware of everything you need to be your best. And sometimes they're the moments when you're overthinking it, and you're too busy thinking about I'm gonna have to be in my corners here. And then all of a sudden the ball's just through you, absolutely fucking glorious. And then Joe Gomez sort of scuffs one, comes off a defender. We react again. Ross Trent is the most aware. This is the one that's the perfect example of what we're talking about, and Moyes' substitutions and where they completely capitulate. Trent Alexander-Arnold is just basically completely unmarked on the right wing. He has it twice. He has it in the disallowed goal as well. But it's the awareness, because we can talk about all the things this side's good at, and it's great at fighting. It's got a great understanding of the system and all this kind of stuff, but it's great at just being alert to things happening in and around the box. Divock Origi in the derby last season is a similar sort of kind of situation to it. Just absolutely brilliant. And it was, even if we'd not scored that, I felt like we'd go and get another one anyway.
Yeah, it's the confidence they grew into the game. I think when we went 2-1 behind was when we actually started playing football and took control of the game. But I think before that, it was just a bit even, wasn't it? It was a bit ship. I think once they knew the crowd was behind them, which I think goes hand in hand, because there was loads of stuff on Twitter going how shit the crowd was at half time for the first half. I think sometimes.
I mean, where were you, Saka? Sorry,
Upper Kenny.
Yeah, of course. So, there were no coherent songs really sang in the first half.
All I could really hear was the West Ham fans singing.
Absolutely, and I heard a few bits and pieces of like. We scored, we said we're going to win the league, and then when they scored, they sang we're going to win the league, which is brilliant, by the way.
Oh, they did like three or four of them self-deprecating chants, which, to be honest...
Left us flat.
I actually think they're really funny once, but then I think the poor lads on the pitch, you're singing about how shit your players are. Yeah. Like, one's funny, four's no help. Yeah.
Well, they sang one about we scored a goal.
Yeah.
Like we scored a goal. I don't know what the tune is. Probably like we scored a goal.
How shit must you be when winning away?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And yeah, you're right. That doesn't do your team much.
His lads just looking around and going,
we're playing really well.
Fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you. I'm going to lose this game now. Yeah. Just for you.
In your faces. But it was, and that's where, again, it goes back to my point at the top about the win that we needed. Like, I've said this for ages. I remember it was the coach greeting thing. When we see how big we can do it, it makes you think, why don't you do it for every game? And then the thing, well, you want it to be special, but there is something about raising your overall level. And that first 55 minutes, 54 minutes or whatever of that game was everything that that's been terrible about Anfield for the last 20 years. There's a lot of expectation. You go in, no one's bang up for it. No one's getting into it. And that the whistling and the jeering of every opponent's touch, why we can do that for every game, because it makes us something else.
But I think you're right, there's expectancy and possibly complacency from people. Yeah,
absolutely.
Go, I'm not criticising everyone in that sense, but like, they need something to feed off as well. So it's a novelty to go 1-0 behind at Anfield, and everyone just go, oh, what's this? What do we do now? We're normally 2-3 goals up, and I think once we go 2-1 down, that's when everyone went, actually, with the substitution with Ox as well, let's get a fucking grip of this. Yeah. And I think that combined...
They scored, and we immediately started chanting off the back of it. And as you say, the second they then got the ball, it was venomous. Mm.
Because everywhere can join in with that as well. That, you know, the booing and the whistling and the cheering, everyone can join in with it. I don't think it's sustainable for our crowd, to be honest with you. I think there's probably a percentage of people that's sustainable for. But generally speaking, I just don't think it's sustainable. And I'm not even sure it should be.
Yeah.
To be honest, I get that, don't get me wrong, I'm not disagreeing with it. I'd love it to be like that personally, every single game. But also there's a rawness and a realness to what happened last night.
Yeah.
Which I think you lose the impact if it's all the time.
The thing is, though, it's all the time. It's not all the time for the players you're playing against. I get your point. I think, and the thing is, you can't do it often. Because how often do teams actually have the ball at Anfield? It's why, I remember going back to 13-14, we did it to City and ruined them. And then Chelsea came and gave us the ball. And you can't boo because your own players have got the ball. You sing, you know, and what we do with the best of it is you boo when they've got the ball, and then after a while you get bored of booing and you just sing a song for a bit. But everyone's used to making noise. I see no reason why we can't fucking make everyone feel dead uncomfortable, because ultimately you're only talking probably collectively on of their teams being on the ball. It's like a handful of minutes, isn't it? More than anything else. But it makes, it's just, yeah.
I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not trying to disagree here. Like, I'm not trying to. I'm just telling you what I feel like. And you know when you get those 10-minute Bobby Firmino chants that are just out of this world and are so much better than the platitudes that are sometimes given at the start of a game, just because it's the start of the game. Yeah. There is a big difference between that. And I just feel like if that was all the time, you lose something. Mm. It's not quite the same.
Natural,
all the way
isn't
through.
It? When that happens,
and I can't put my finger on what I think it is. Yeah. But I've been to games where we've sang all game, but they've not felt like Barcelona
or fucking
Dortmund, because there's something in the air that I can't explain.
But this is what I'm talking about, raising your overall level, is that at the minute, like, we should complacency is the word. And it's a creeping thing, but that's what I looked at it and was like, this is what the rest of the season's going to be like. There's going to be no atmosphere at Anfield between now and the end of the season, because there's an expectation we're just going to fucking win every game and it's going to be done. And when we went 1-0 up, I was a bit like, we celebrated and then it was just shit. And I was like, this is just shit, and we shouldn't be getting, and you can't have it perfect, but we shouldn't have a situation anymore where we can hear the opposition fans, because we should be creating something, because we're about to win the fucking league. And that's what me saying it's not going to make any fucking difference at all. But the point is, we're always going to raise our game for Barcelona, and we're also going to raise our game for big European nights and Man City and the big rivals. But the issue's always about how do you just rise the tide on everything else in between, instead of it having to still be these fucking massive peaks and drops. Like, we need to go a goal down for it to be a thing.
I think it was a perfect storm. I think what Ross says before was right. Sometimes you need the team to do the business on the pitch. I know Klopp came out before the game, we needed to come out and do that, but I think it was a perfect storm of, I think the ref wasn't giving us decisions, and then we just started turning the screw. And when Liverpool gets into the rhythm of winning the ball back, Fabinho does it so well, and we're like, Bobby's running back to get the ball back, Mane's running back, getting the ball back, keeping this consistent like pressure going, and then, like you say, every time the ball goes out for the corner, everyone jumps up.
The play helps to build up the pressure, 100%. Undoubtedly. But just in terms of a mentality, I think once they go a goal ahead, it's like, hang on a second, you think you're taking our points? Well, fuck you, they're our points, let's have our points. Whereas the mentality going into the game was, they're our points, don't worry, they're our points. Whereas it should be, you think you're going to come into our ground and take our points. That's what, like, the fuck they do go to Belgrade. That's what they fucking do. Yeah. You don't come into our house and try and have our points off us.
That's what they do in
Germany. You know what I mean? There's still a, whatever reason. Maybe it's just being off the boil and not having enough footy, because a lot of us were walking back into Anfield for the first time in, like, it's like a month or whatever since we fucking...
Every game Anfield should more or less be a fucking party. Fucking 22 points clear. Fucking celebrate the team that you've got. Yeah. And again, it's a, you know, what's happened before, isn't it? Going 1-0 up and then 1-1. It's West Ham on a Monday night. I can't get up for that.
Being upbeat is hard. Being angry is dead easy. We're all angry. We're all fucking dead pissed off. Just come into the fucking game pissed off.
And just shout
at the fucking cunts who are in the way, you know?
Did it happen when they scored the goals, like, the crowd got up? Did that happen like it has every game at Anfield? Yeah. Or was it... Because I think that's a massive part of how our mentality's changed. Yes. And we're speaking about raising our level. That didn't happen. That didn't happen a year and a half ago. It just didn't. Yeah. Is everyone just going, it's fine, we've conceded. Yeah. Bang, let's get up. And you saw Virgil van Dijk, as soon as he heard it, went, get that ball back, we're going again. And I think you are right in what you're saying. We are getting there.
Well, I'm saying
what we're doing.
That might be the moment that makes it a thing, you know, because that's the thing. We talk about it like... There's not so long, I was talking to the guy next to me. Have you got on to the fact that they now, at every game now, they say about standing in the cop? They don't make you sit down anymore. Mm. And that's been a building thing. It used to be European nights, they turn a blind eye.
Or the big games.
But every other game, the stewards are actively. And then this season, they've been saying, I've been told for every game this season in the Cup, every single game, and they've got a voice over the tannoy that used to say, like, sit down for in the interest of the people with small children or people who can't stand be this. And they made it a bit like anyone who's caught persistent standing will be ejected from the stadium. And now they just go, can we just ask you to please be aware of issues surrounding persistent standing? Thank you.
And then everyone sings and reinforces why we stood up. I love it.
But again, that's like, as I say, things happening at times. Like I said, this might be, I'm saying this all now. We might just start doing that from, you know, or more and more from games now on. And if we can do that, fuck me. Mm. Fuck me. You know what I mean? What an unbelievable thing we'll have there. Anyway, look, 22, about, oh yeah, Alisson brilliant at the end, denied Jared Bowen. It almost gets overlooked. We've got the best goalkeeper in the world. He's glorious.
Doesn't that sum him up, though? We've said this loads of times before. Like, I don't think he makes a mistake for their first goal, but he gets distracted, doesn't he? And obviously, you know, concede the second. But we sat at goalkeepers 2-3 years ago, and then they wouldn't have made that save because their heads would have gone.
Yeah.
He's so far out of where you're supposed to be comfortable as a goalkeeper, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
As well, like, you know what I mean? And I believe Martin Tyler said, well, he gets a bit lucky, and it's his head. That's why you stay big.
Yeah.
The whole point of being a fucking goalkeeper, you've just got to take it on whatever body part you can get there. That's, you know, I played footy on a Wednesday night last week. I have got bruises all over my thighs, and the lads were fuming on me because I wasn't moving out the way.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the people you play five-a-side with actively dive like this.
Yeah. Well, you go in those situations, one-on-one situations like that.
Ross.
As a centre-forward, you've got two choices. You're pretty much dinking it over the keeper, or you're going round the goalkeeper. And Alisson's saying, try and go round me, mate.
Well, because you saw what happened the other week.
Absolutely. And so, but I think so much of forwards is just, it's instinctive. You're not really reacting to the situation. You're just going through the motions. That's why a lot of people just always go around the goalkeeper. Like the original Ronaldo, just go around the keeper every time because that was his way of doing things. Someone like that Bowen lad has come from nowhere, effectively. He's not an elite level footballer. At the levels he's played at, goalkeepers probably do just dive at the feet. And that's why you get like you're either going to get a penalty or you're going to dink it over or you're going to dink it over the keeper. And Alisson just comes out this big giant bear and he just fucking hits it at him. It's just good goalkeeping.
Alisson had one before where a ball kind of comes over the top and I think he hesitates to go and it might have been offside anyway. But he hesitates to go and on the commentary they were like, why isn't he just not get that? And I was like, because look how big he is. No matter what that player does, he's blocking it regardless. So he doesn't need to fucking dive at him and punch him in the head like Edison would. Yeah. You know what I mean? You just go big, stop it, and it goes out for the corner in the end or something. I think.
Yeah, but absolutely. Brilliant. 22 points clear again.
Slept well last night.
Yeah, just mad. Because I genuinely, this is the first game, Chris, where when I had the little conversation about when we're 2-1 down, and I was like, well, this might be the end of the Invincibles run. This might be that. And that would be a shame, but look, ultimately, it's always going to be about winning the title. And it was the first time I wasn't arsed, 19 points is a ridiculous lead to have. 22 points is, I mean, again, it's only what we're back to. We're not deleting them at the moment. Not getting any bigger. It's also not getting any smaller. The difference between 19 points and 22 points is a bit moot, but to be in the 20s, it's just
crazy. And once again, like, you know, we've won 18 games on the bounce, and yeah, Sky Sports, and I know you retweeted it last week and all that type of stuff. It's all like the records that are upcoming as well, isn't it? But that's 18 Premier Leagues. We've got the record with City now. We're coming up on the away records. Yeah. We're coming up on the home records.
We've equaled the wins that the Invincibles got in their league.
Well, that's the most wins. Oh, sorry, the Invincibles one. But the one that I find most fascinating is it was only Manchester United when we were a game behind getting that record. So we'd done 17 wins on the bounce and then drew at United.
Yeah.
And that was it, over. And it's fucking 18 games later and we've equaled it.
Yeah.
We've had two attempts at the hardest record to get in league football history in one fucking year. And we've done it, like, you know what I mean? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it is. I must admit, I was thinking, how many games are there left in the season? If we don't do it now, is there enough left for us to have another spin at it before the season ended? But no, it is. You're right. More points than Man United's treble-winning team amassed the season.
Equal that.
Regardless, but we're going to have more than that team had. Same, similar with the Invincibles. Side.
Most importantly, 11 more draws and we've won it.
Also, I think we play twice.
Can't do that.
We play twice before City play again.
Yeah.
So we can see we'll be 28 points clear by the time. Fucking by the time.
Imagine Man City rocking up and being like, what's the point? What is the point? Because Leicester look like they're pretty much done. Like, City's going to be showing up in second place pretty sharp.
The thing is, like, we're comparing ourselves to some of the best Premier League era teams ever, but you've got the best part for me is there was a eulogy, someone was eulogising on the commentary I was listening to about how we're comparable to this the team in, like, the 70s and what have you. This team of legends, like, these players that I just get told about, and they're just like, this player was the best. And I was like, well, I've never seen them. And now this team is better. And it's breaking more records, and it's never going to get forgotten. And I'm going to be able to sit there and go, when I'm talking to people, be like, where were you at this game? And I'll remember. I remember exactly. I went to that one. Oh, did you go to that one? That's boss that year. And I'm like, yeah, I was actively there. I was in the crowd for that one. There's so many memories that have been made throughout this. And we're going to literally be able to sit there for the rest of my life. I'm going to be able to sit there and go, yeah, I watched Liverpool just win the league.
It
doesn't even matter.
I'm looking forward to in 30 years' time being me dad and me lad being me. I'm going like, and what was that like, dad? Like, oh, son, we just, you know, they just go a goal up and we just shout at them and go and win. It was great.
Yeah. After last night's game, my dad always told me the worst thing you do against the Liverpool side in the 70s was score against them. Like, last night, I was like, fucking
happened. Can we speak about the 70s side? How amazing that last night, Monday Night Football, actually chose to talk about football outside of the Premier League era by ranking Bob Paisley and his Liverpool side as the best team of all time.
Good segments.
Yeah, it was really good.
Do you know what? Monday Night Footy is the best fucking thing on television. Yeah. Consistently, like the levels that that team of people get up to is unbelievable. And you know, to rank Bob Paisley's side up there above all else is just brilliant. And it's something Liverpool fans have probably known for a long time.
But they talk about it. And I was watching it back this morning, and they were saying like they won. The first team to win the European Cup and the league in the same season. They won the European Cup back to back. First English team to do it back to back
and they got the
UEFA Cup in that spell as well. And I was just thinking that, like, I know that this side doesn't have that silverware, but how close this side is, and we could have
European Cups, two league titles,
because they're talking about like a 3 year period. And in a 3 year period, if you count this season, we'll have to see how this season ends. This 3 year period could have been two European Cups and a league title. It could still be two European Cups and a league title and one more final. And it could have been two league titles. So fractionally close to being in that era of Klopp, you know, three European finals in that time, another cup final thrown into there. Two league title challenges, potentially one that wins it.
In four games, if we win the next four games in the Premier League, we are undoubtedly the best club side in the world. Yeah. We were the world champions, European champions, and the English league champions. They are three massive, massive accolades that not like that to hold all three of them for the end of the season.
Yeah.
We're saying it's going to be a party atmosphere. Liverpool is gonna, like, I'm already happy regardless of what, like, football just makes me happy at the moment. There's nothing better than like thinking about it. All I need to do is think about it and I'm beaming smile.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And it, for us to just be able to sit there and bask in it, we're gonna have however many games of the season. And yeah, like, it, maybe the atmosphere is not gonna be massive because we'll be like, oh, we've already won it. But you best believe everyone's going in the boozer straight after. Everyone's in the boozer watching the game just with smiles on the face. Yeah. And the effect that this team has had on not just this city, because there's supporters around the world, but just think about everyone whose day is made every, like, you can just go into work and just stroll in, or any time you're having a hardship, you're like, I'll just watch the Reds here. And it's like therapy every time you watch it.
I think it might even be better for people outside the city, because they, like, some of them get up at like fucking 3 to watch the game. We just don't lose anymore. At least it's worthwhile for them now.
When you're
rocking
into work, pissed at 9 o'clock in the morning, like you've seen us win. No, because that's the one thing, it adds to so much of the negativity that surrounds the club on social media and all that, because there's no accounting for having your day ruined before your day's even begun, or, you you know, right at the end, it's staying up till all hours to watch them. We don't really can take that into consideration. We're down anyway, but if you added an extra 5 hours to the day in doing that, then yeah. But yeah, when Liverpool are great, everyone's great. It's magnificent. Right, before we wrap up, Chris did a special feature with Paul from Kit It Out, which is a fantastic campaign that looks to get people donating old football shirts to give to disadvantaged kids and what have you. Take a little look and listen to this. Other than that, thank you very much for watching and we'll see you all soon.
For anybody who's watching now who doesn't know, you take in football kits and give them to people who are disadvantaged and don't have football kits. That's important.
So we get footy kits donated to us to the page just from members of the public, just everyday people who have got kits left over, and then we get them out to community centres in Liverpool, all around Liverpool, in all different places, and then they get them out to kids who haven't got football kits.
And you've got quite a bit of media coverage recently. I saw you on the news the other week.
Yeah, a lot of people have been getting involved, and because they obviously see it as there's a gap, there's kids who haven't got football kits, and the idea is just resonates with everyone, really. I mean, we go to community centres and there's kids there who have only got one kit between four of them in a family, so they wear the kit every single day, each person. So when you get a new kit, and you know what it's like, when you get a new football kit, it's like you'll never have the kit off. So it just gives them confidence as well to play with the mates, and you can play anywhere they want now with a football kit.
It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? And, you know, since you've when did you actually start the project?
We started it in October 2019, so 5 months ago, not long. And as I say, we had 2 weeks off work, and I just started a Facebook, started a Twitter, and just started bombarding people with messages about what we're doing, and people just reacted to it, and here we are.
As you say, it does really resonate with people, doesn't it? And especially, like, you know, I'm thinking of myself right now, and, you know, I've got two girls, but I've got them footy kits, they've got the Liverpool kits and stuff, and to be honest with you, Paul, they've probably grown out of them, and they're still just sat there in my cupboard, so I'm going to make sure that I get you those kits, because I know I've got the full kit. Do you accept more than just the full kits?
We accept shirts, shorts, socks. I mean, we've been to places and kids are playing in the uniforms, and they can't get on the pitch because health and safety says you can't play in your uniform or your school shoes. And even if they do get on the pitch, they're just wrecking their uniforms and that. And then it's a cycle because then they need a uniform and they can't afford that. It's just things like that. Everyone could do with a kit, and there's people out there who are so underprivileged now.
How many kids have you got that are extra large men's size? Because I've got fucking tons of them.
There's so many. So we go to community centres, but also there's a lot of work that Michelle does with Asylum Link as well, with refugees who come over here and they want to play football, but know what I mean? They've got nothing at all, but we get them kits, adult kits go to them, and they're made up.
So if I brought them in as well and got them to
every
you,
kit could go somewhere, and it would make a person's day, you know what I mean? To see someone giving them a kit, it says to them, you know what I mean, welcome, go and play football and go and enjoy yourself.
And so, like, where can we send these kits to if anybody wants to?
You can get in touch with the Twitter page or the Facebook page, and we'll direct you to the drop-off points, and even come and knock at our house, and we'll open the door, make you a cup of tea, and show you the kits we've already got.
And who has been sort of the biggest supporter, if you were? Because, you know, I see, you know, AS Roma is one of the things that I've seen while I've been following you and stuff like that. Is there any other clubs that have got involved?
Yeah, well, AS Roma, obviously, amazing. Paul Rogers, who does the social media, he's absolutely...
He used to work at Liverpool, actually, didn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely unbelievable for him to just jump on board and do that. He didn't have to, but obviously their social media's ahead of the game, Roma. We've got Jason Pettigrew from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. He's their editor. He's going to bring kits over for the Legends games for us to give out. But not just that, it's working-class solidarity. And as the fellas from Fan Support and Food Bank say, it's just one big circle. Everyone helps each other. We've had kits from members of the public all over Liverpool, but schools like St. Paul's Junior School do a collection for us and get us kits out. Just people like Oldman Property in Liverpool City Centre, they've bought us new kits. There's just massive thing. The Runcorn Linnets Football Club dropped like two boxes off for us yesterday, just full of kits. Everyone's just getting involved. It's just, as I say, working class solidarity all coming together.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.